Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Good afternoon and welcome into the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. I am Ethan Hannaford, producer for the Mark Reardon Show, as well as the Annie Fry Show, and I am joined by the one and only Sue Thomas. Sue, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you.
Good.
I just made a big old pot of beef barley soup.
Ooh.
And it smells good in here. You know how that is.
Yeah, you know, you're at home today, so now you say it smells good in here. I just have to make sure the people don't know that you're not sharing this soup
Odyssey
with me today. I do not appreciate that.
I'll bring you some.
Okay, sounds good. You know, it would not be a Mark Reardon Show if, Sue, you didn't bring up some sort of food that you're either making or something, because you are the ultimate food connoisseur. So
I love it. It's
Sue,
really, yeah. Go ahead,
Sue. How was the weekend?
The weekend was great. I like these weird weeks where we work for 2 days and then we have a day off, and then we work for 2 days and then we have 2 days off. But Michael and I went to, we have this house that's built in 1968 that we bought and are doing some stuff to it.
Okay.
And the outside of the house, at some point, they replaced the lights, you know, the fixtures on the front door.
Sure.
And over the garage. And they're kind of not something that we prefer. So we looked on eBay. Well, actually, Michael didn't. He found some of the period lights, which are so cool, and it's eBay, and he worked it out with the guys. So we drove up to Springfield, Illinois yesterday to pick up these lights so this guy wouldn't have to ship them.
Well, that's
and
nice.
And they turned out to be great. We had some Thai food. But when we're in Springfield, Illinois, you know I'm a connoisseur of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, yeah.
And the Dana Thomas house there is outstanding. If it's tourable, and we took a tour of that, which I've done before, but boy, there was a really good tour guide that time, and the house looked just lovely. So if anybody's interested in doing that, it's really only like an hour and a half to Springfield, Illinois, and it's great. So that's what we did. I'm guessing you were about football.
A lot of football, you know. But real quick, people underrate Springfield, Illinois. Cool town. There's some cool stuff. They got the Lincoln Museum there. There's some cool stuff to do there. So, being from Illinois, I've been there a couple of times. But yeah, that's definitely an underrated spot. That's not too far away. But yes, it was mostly football this weekend for yours truly. Actually went to the Anheuser-Busch Brewery Lights
with my
wife's family, as well as my family who lives just across the river. Wife's family is in town, so that was a great time. And then yesterday, big game for us Vikings fans. Beat the Packers, so I know Mark Reardon is still probably licking his wounds from that one.
Yep.
But that was definitely a lot of fun. I don't know if you knew this, Sue, but the Minnesota Vikings have a fan club here in St. Louis that they call the Vikings Fan Club of St. Louis.
Here and in St. Louis? I did not know that.
They meet for every single game at the Cybergs on Dorset in Maryland Heights. And this place was, this is only the second time I've been, but this is, I mean, this place was absolutely decked out with Vikings fans. I mean, there were probably there were probably at least 200 Vikings fans there. It was
unreal.
It was awesome. So it was super cool atmosphere. I mean, there were probably 50 to 60 TVs around us, I mean, with the game on and the audio blasting. So it was a really cool atmosphere, and the Vikings won. So that was a lot of fun. Enjoyed that. And now, big game next week. The winner of the Lions and the Vikings is the one seed in the NFC. So looking forward to that one on Sunday Night Football next week.
I have to go Lions. I apologize.
You know what? It's okay. But, no. Hey, they're a fun team to cheer for, so I'll give it to, I'll
they
give
really
it to
are.
You. But looking forward to that. Hey, we have a very full show today when it comes to more best segments from 2024. Here in this first hour, Mike Del Judas from Billy Joel's band. He joined back in September. He's going to be talking. Well, they were in Bush. They performed in St. Louis just a couple of months ago as well at Busch Stadium. And Mike had the opportunity to join Mark before the start of that concert. So we hear a little bit about how Mike, who played in just a replica band, I guess you would say, that performed a lot of covers of his songs, Billy Joel's songs, how he ended up getting into the band. A lot of cool stories with him. And then as well as that, Joe Arnold, a longtime Louisville broadcaster, he talked some Major League Baseball with Mark and I a couple of weeks ago as well. And then at the end of the hour, Sue, you and Mark talked about this really interesting story about a month ago regarding a missing couple that had been missing from New York since 1980 and how they were recently found, kind of the mystery following that. So
incredible.
This is going to be a very, very, very full hour here of Best Of segments on The Mark Rudin Show. We'll have Selena Zito next hour. Frank Cusimano will join live. And then my buddy Brandon Gallegos is going to talk the Winter Classic at 5:30. So be sure to stay tuned in for what will be a very full hour of the Mark Rudin Show. But for now, Mike Del Judas with Mark Rudin.
Years, this is when I met this guy, Mike Del Judas, who is with us this afternoon. He's part of Billy's band. His story is amazing. He will share it with us this afternoon. Mike Del Judas, welcome back. How are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm doing good, Mark. How are you?
Fantastic. It just seems like yesterday when we were getting together here in St. Louis, and I think that was like 11 years ago or 10 years ago when you were here the first time and we had a chance to meet.
Yeah, that's when I first joined the band. Yeah, I remember it was a really, really fun time over there.
I tell people all the time, and Fred and I, you know, we share this story every once in a while if Billy's in the news or something comes up. And I tell people all the time that if you would look up, like, Living the Dream in Wikipedia or the encyclopedia, if we still have those, they would see your story, Mike Del Judas, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they certainly would. There's no doubt about that. They're very blessed and very serendipitous type of thing, if you will.
Well, just give me the short, because I know the story, but for folks who don't know the story, just kind of put that in synopsis form. I got all kinds of things to ask you, but just refresh our memories on how Mike Del Judas, who was in this and really has to this day, this Billy Joel, you know, tribute band called Big Shot, ended up in Billy's actual band.
Well, it was to do the Cliff Notes version. I was doing Big Shot, pure Billy stuff for about probably 13 years at that point. Or maybe a little less than that. And then I had a couple of guys that played with Billy. Tommy Burns, Chuck Berge came and joined my band for a while when they weren't on the road with Billy. And then Tommy had mentioned a couple of years in, it was probably 2013, I think, mentioned that Billy was going back out on the road and needed somebody to do rehearsals for him, to sit in and do rehearsals. So I went in and did that. And unbeknownst to me, there was already a plan hatched to get me involved. And before you know it, it was a couple of days into rehearsals and Billy showed up and the rest is history. Bada bing. And they're asking me if I have a passport, this, that, the other thing. And it was kind of a whirlwind, you know, just a whirlwind situation. And here I am. 11 years later, really grateful.
But it's one thing to kind of be in this band. I think it's a total another thing to evolve as you have with Billy and with this band, because for people who have seen you here in St. Louis, you were here at Busch Stadium a couple years ago, or even the show at Enterprise Center, you get to do some solos, Billy highlights you, so you're just having a blast up there.
Yeah, it's like I said, very fortunate. You know, you step in poop, and this is what happens.
Oh, stop it! Stop it! Doing great.
It really is. You know, when you're up there and you're doing that kind of stuff, it's very surreal. You know, and looking over and seeing him every night, it's a crazy, crazy experience to be a part of. That's
all I can say. Where are you on the tour right now? And are the Madison Square Garden shows bad? I tell you what, on a bucket list, that would be to see you guys at Madison Square Garden. It's been a historic run. Are those shows still going on, or have they wrapped?
They wrapped. They finally wrapped. We did the last show a couple months ago. That was a heck of a run, man.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody thought it would go that long. I definitely know he didn't think it would. And I think he just kind of, and we're still going strong now. So, you take every one of those garden dates that we had every month and now just transplant it somewhere else around the country or even around the world. And that's kind of what we're doing. So we're playing a couple of times a month, two shows a month. We're co-billing as we are,
with Sting,
tomorrow night,
yeah.
With Sting, yep. So, excited, man. That's always a fun one, too, playing with him because, he's a musician's musician. So for us, it's a real good time to go there and watch him play and hear him. And I think we were all very influenced by Sting also. So
doesn't it kind of piss you off that he doesn't seem to age? Although, I watch you on Facebook, too. You don't seem to age either, Mike. I'll tell you that.
Well, a couple of doses of Just for Men, goes – works wonders. Works wonders.
Let me ask you about Europe. One of my bucket list items was to see the E Street Band in Europe, and I was so lucky last year. I finagled a little trip. I took some listeners to Spain, Mike, and it just so happened, coincidentally, I have no idea how this happened, that the E Street Band was opening up the European tour in Barcelona when I was there. And weird, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it was, I'd heard from so many artists, friends of mine and other people, how unique the European crowds are. And, I'm there in Barcelona with people from all over Eastern and Western Europe who had seen that band many times. And they traveled, all over. A lot of Billy's fans do that as well. But those European crowds are unique, aren't they?
They're very different. Yeah, they are. They're very different. They really, really love Billy over there. And I'm sure they love Bruce the same. They have such an appreciation because I guess they don't get to see it as much, in the States. We're bouncing around or we're doing the Garden every month so people can come in and see it if they want. But it's unique to get over there. We did Japan last year, which that was a very interesting show. That we talk about interesting audiences. That was very interesting. They have this thing where they love music. You can tell, and they're all very pinpointed on you. And when they like something, they don't cheer like they do in the United States. They all make this sound. It's like a collective sound, and they just go, ooh.
Some of that was evident.
It's a ooh sound.
Yeah, right. But some of that was evident. I'm a huge Cheap Trick fan. If you listen to Budokan, it was amazing because they're kind of singing along, but not to the lyrics. They're providing their own little rhythm section. So that is unique. And I asked friends in Spain because I was with some folks before the show in Barcelona. And I said, well, how, and this was a language barrier. I had a translator there with me because it was a friend. I said, well, how do you guys know all the lyrics? Because they're all singing everything as well. And they said, well, the records came out. We listened to them in our home or in our bedroom, and they sing them over and over again, and that's how they know the words. Makes sense, right?
Yes, phonetically, yeah. I guess you learn it that way. I kind of did that with the opera song that I do with Billy, which is, and yes, I'm Italian. I don't speak Italian. I listened to it growing up. My grandparents used to curse each other in Italian. It was that was fun. But I kind of did the same thing. You listen to it a bunch of times, and all of a sudden, phonetically, you just kind of get it. And then, of course, I delved into the lyric behind it and all that kind of stuff and got more into that. But, yeah, I guess if you listen to something enough in another language, you don't know what you're saying, but you make it sound right.
Absolutely. Is there a different feeling for you as a band member when you have a stadium show compared to an arena show?
People ask this a lot. I have to tell you, I love the stadiums, but man, you give me a good arena that's packed with energy. And I think I call it the up and out syndrome. We could do 55, 60,000 in a stadium and the sound, the crowd sound, everything just kind of goes up and out, But when a place is closed, there's something about the energy that stays in the room. Like when we did the Garden, there was nothing like that energy. It was so intense, you thought the roof would blow off. It was, it's like that. So I think it's good. It's never bad. Let's be realistic.
What's
playing a stadium,
yeah.
It can't be bad, but it's different. Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely different.
How many other projects are you doing right now? One of the things that I remember, you'll have to refresh my memory on the specifics, but didn't you, I think you created a friendship with Kevin James, and didn't you do a theme for one of his TV shows?
Yeah, I wrote a theme song for Kevin Can Wait, which was a few years back now. Also been working with him on some other stuff. We've been getting together, hanging out a bit, you know, doing a couple of little funny podcast type of recording things that we put together. But yeah, and I think there might be some more movie stuff happening in the future. And you know, I got to act a couple of times too on that show also. So I got to make a couple of appearances, and we do some shows together. I'll go to one of his shows, his stand up shows, and we'll do some stuff at the end, or he'll come to mine. He'll come to some of my shows and get out, you know, with me in the audience and crank it up. And he loves to perform. He loves music.
I missed your appearance on the show, but I love Kevin. I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he was awesome. What is, you know, obviously that might have been a friendship that developed out of everything that you've been doing for the past 10 years. Is there a best either musical encounter or celebrity encounter, anything that has been kind of been in front of you that was just kind of mind-blowing, Mike Dilger? Maybe all of it is mind-blowing to you, right?
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's so hard. People ask that, and I think it's gonna take a retrospective look when this is all done. And I think I'm gonna look back, and I'm gonna, you know, then go back to videos and pictures and kind of relive a lot of it. When you're in it, you're just kind of caught up in it. There's been so many great artists. I mean, you know, bucket list people that I've gotten to meet and to play with, and you know, obviously none of that happens without Billy. So I mean, it's been an incredible ride, and you know, like Tony Bennett. I mean, you know, you think of all the people I got to see up close, and
that's incredible. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Well, I will be honest with you, Mike, and I don't know if you remember the particulars here, but when we first met, you know, you were here in the studio, and then I go to the show, and you texted me overnight, and you said, "I lost my iPad." Fred and I still have deep regret that we did not hold that iPad, at the very least, hostage, because it could have been very valuable, Mike, so I have regrets about that, unfortunately. But thank you so much for jumping on here. By the way, I have to give you compliments on something else. I checked out your website, which I think is just MikeDelJudas.com, but it's really slick. It looks very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, we've gotten away from the, you know, we don't do all Billy anymore. So we kind of took the Big Shot thing off of it. It's just Mike Del Judas now, simply because people with Big Shot, people would assume that they were getting tickets to go see an all Billy music show. And we're doing like a lot of different classic stuff now, different artists and a lot of original stuff too. So I've been, you know, kind of mixing that in between. So but it's the same band and same vibe, same all of that. We still do a bunch of Billy tunes, so it's not much, you know, not much changed in that regard. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I think all I do is I'm on social media now more than anything, so I forget that we actually have a website.
Yeah, I see your Facebook stuff. You post a lot on Facebook, but the website, it really does look good. By the way, the other thing I remember from 10 years ago, I don't know if you remember this because there's been so many shows, but we've shared this one on the air too. We're sitting there watching that show at the end of Billy's show, and there was a woman that comes out of the crowd and jumps on stage, and she ends up on the piano during a song. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
I texted you, and I said, that was a setup, and you said, nope, it was not.
Nope. Not a setup. We were shocked. And from what I can remember, we were pretty shocked. And I just kept thinking, is anyone going to tackle her? You know, first of all, is the piano going down? That was number two. You know, is the leg going to break on the piano? Yeah, that was crazy. And that, you know what? I can't remember another time in the last 11 years where anybody jumped on stage. I think that was a one-off.
And it was very smooth. Again, I think the people in the audience thought it was part of the show. Mike, thank you so much. You've been great to me over the years. Who's the crabbiest person we know when it comes to the changes in baseball?
Joe Arnold.
There he is, Joe Arnold. Ding, ding, ding. It is him. He's with us this afternoon. How are you, Joe? How about that for an introduction?
I warned you.
He sends me this article, Fred, last night from the New York Times. The golden at-bat rule could give MLB a new shine, but is it worth it? And your comment was, they're really trying to lose me. Now, you have been a contrarian on many of these rules issues. You might be on the same page with the rest of America on this one, Joe, because
I warned you.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be going very well.
When they began with all of this sort of defining deviancy down, when they began just winnowing away at the strategy and at the soul of the game, thank you there so much, whether that's Fred, Ethan, or anyone else, I appreciate the help. Okay. I'm just saying, when they began doing that, I warned you. I said, they're not going to stop here because they're onto gimmicks, and the people who run baseball do not love baseball. So it won't end here.
Well,
we won't be finished until we have a pitching machine on the mound because we can't risk injury.
All right, let's explain what's happening here. And by the way, I don't know that I can disagree with you on this. And you did warn us, Joe. You really did. But in fairness, and Jennings talked about this a couple hours ago, and he even wrote a piece for the LA Times. Do you think, in retrospect, all of your fear and concern about the rules from last year were warranted or not?
I warned you. I'm just saying, because as soon as you begin to degradate the game, is that it won't stop there. It is the slippery slope that we talk about. So it was baseball's own fault that they couldn't, you know, keep the umpires already had rules in place to keep the pace of the game going, but they were too cowardly to enforce them, so they had to bring this rule in. So I understood it. You know, it's unfortunate they had to do that. But, you know, I'll say I warned you.
So let's explain what they're talking about here. Ethan's going to join us as well. We're all baseball fans. We all have opinions about this. This seems like a trial balloon that Major League Baseball has floated that probably isn't going over very well. But this is how they positioned it in the New York Times and the Athletic. What if a team could choose one at-bat in every game to send its best hitter to the plate, even if it wasn't that guy's turn? So that's the golden at-bat concept in a nutshell. So there's two outs in the 10th inning in October. The Yankees and the Guardians are tied. But in this alternative October universe, it's not Juan Soto who's due up. It's Oswaldo Cabrera. Except the Yankees say, no, we're not going to use that. We're going to send up Soto as our golden at-bat. So that's basically the concept to make the game more exciting. Fred, what do you say?
I don't like it at all.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how I felt. I'm trying to remember. I didn't like the designated hitter. You know, 30 years ago.
Joe didn't like that either.
Yeah,
right?
when it came out. And I definitely didn't want it to come to the National League. Kind of accepted it now. But this is like a big camel nose under the tent. You know, if they allow this, what's it do to records? I mean, it just doesn't seem fair.
Well, that's a good point about records and things along those lines. Yeah, Ethan?
Yeah, I'm also not a fan of this. You know, I think about some of the biggest moments that we have seen in baseball history where, you know, names are become iconic because of the situation that they're in. You know, I mean, Annie, when we were discussing this earlier, brought up David Freese, but I mean, David Bodie. I mean, there are a bunch of names that you could dive into.
Guys that became heroes that weren't expected to be the
because
heroes.
Because they stepped up in the moment. I think that if you were to implement this, it would take away that opportunity for some of those really special moments where the underdog guy comes through, which I think is honestly not just baseball. I think it's one of the coolest part of sports.
Well, that's true. I would agree with that.
What if you only did it like during an all-star game where it didn't really matter the outcome?
Well, that's goofy too, though, because then you're taking away from whoever else might be like an all-star hitter. Joe, doesn't this seem like one of those things? Look, I get that they're trying to come up with ideas, and I don't really have an issue with most of the rule changes. I think we'd agree that the guy on second base in extra innings, I hate that. I really do.
They're not going to stop. They're going to keep doing this.
Okay.
I'll give another example. We're coming up on a big anniversary next year, the 85 St. Louis Cardinals. Ozzie Smith had never homered from the left side of the plate. Would he have been batting against Tom Niedenfuhr in the go crazy game? No, you would have sent up Jack Clark. You know, you would have sent somebody else up in that situation. But instead, we have go crazy. But they're going to do it. I don't doubt it whatsoever. He's, you know, Manfred says, well, there's a buzz among owners about this because they want cheap highs. They're high on that. And you know, but if I could, here's what they'll never do. What they need to do. And other sports, I do want to borrow from other sports that have succeeded. You know what the NFL has done is they have parity. Any team can win.
Yes.
And so you need a salary floor and a salary cap.
Well, look, I agree with you on that. I really do. And they'll never let it happen. But that's one of the reasons the NFL is so fascinating, because you have teams that rise and fall very quickly. I mean, the Dodgers just signed Blake Snell, and they're going to get another, you know, guy from Korea or overseas. So there's unlimited money for them, and that makes it, you know, there's no parity. There's not as much parity as we'd like to see. So I would agree. Ethan, you like that idea or not?
I think that baseball for a long time has had parity. I think this is the first time you can make an argument that this is like a serious concern. Now, the Yankees were juggernauts back in the day. We know that. But I think that if you go about this, if you start to implement this stuff, you need to take it extremely slow. You need to start with a floor. I'm more concerned about the teams that aren't spending. Like, I mean, some of the top ones that come to mind are the White Sox, the Pirates, and the teams.
No, look at the Pirates.
Than the teams that are going out there, that are wanting to compete and are wanting to be good. And it's not the Dodgers. Yeah, they spend a lot of money, but they also have the best farm system in baseball, and they also put the most into their system. So it's not just spending money that they do.
No,
really
I know.
Well.
But let's all, Joe, this is where I think this is important, because all of us in this room, I think Sue included, we are baseball fans, right? Mm-hmm. We grew up with the sport of baseball. We played baseball. Mm-hmm. I played Little League Baseball. It was the one thing that I loved so much. I had no skill, but I loved it dearly. So we love this game, but we also recognize that my two kids who are in their 20s, they don't give a rip about baseball. And there are younger people that don't care. And I'm not saying change all the dynamics. I'm not going down the rabbit hole that they seem to be going down. But there is a challenge to get people into the game, isn't there?
Again, yes. But I'm saying is, if there was more parity and more competition, and if, you know, I'm closer now, I live closer to Cincinnati than I do to St. Louis now, and I'm still a Cardinals fan. But for a great franchise in history, the Cincinnati Reds, to go since 1990, since the World Series, is a crime. You know, this is these are talk about generations of kids who never grew up knowing a winning team, knowing a World Series championship. This is the key to changing all of this, and not these short-term high gimmicks just to be able to cash in for the present moment.
What I think is the problem is that I think these people with this idea of the golden at-bat don't realize that baseball is the ultimate team sport. All the other sports, you know, you can get that final moment to your star player to take a basketball shot or take a slap shot or to throw the football or catch the football.
That's right.
But in baseball as a team, you just have to wait for the natural flow of the game mm-hmm. to take place.
Right. It's drama. I mean, Scott, Scott, Mark, you're obviously a great lover of great movies and dramas. And it's the unexpected. It's the plot twists. It's those inevitabilities that come about, and it's not necessarily, I mean, the most boring movies are the ones that are so scripted like the Hallmark Channel, right? This is they're making baseball the Hallmark Channel.
Well,
with this rule.
A couple of things that, you know, and this is why I don't think this thing is going to fly. One thing that they mentioned in The Athletic, so here's a wrinkle, and they use the Royals as an example. They use their golden at bat to let Bobby Witt Jr. lead off the ninth, but he makes an out. Who's batting second? Oh, what do you know? It's Bobby Witt Jr. So there's all kinds of things that could come up here that would be kind of weird, which is why I don't think they're going to go down this hole. But, I mean, I would have to give a little credit for creativity only because I have concern about the game of baseball and its future.
I understand. I appreciate that, and I just wish that they would actually take the real problem seriously. Because there's no question, those of us who love baseball and want it to stick around for future generations, they need to focus on what works, and that would be more interesting and compelling seasons for more teams rather than just a select few.
By the way, how'd you like to be the guy that gets, you know, batted, replaced by the golden at bat? I mean, I know that that happens with pinch hitters, but still, if you're the guy that gets replaced, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty crappy.
Yeah, I think you're feeling pretty crappy. Joe,
well,
you have any...
You're even feeling crappier if you're the guy who's pinch hits with the golden at bat and you strike out.
That would be Kamala Harris.
Thank you, Fred. Now, Joe, when Jennings was here a couple hours ago, because we did touch on this topic after we talked politics, the one thing that he supported, curious to see where you are and Fred and Ethan, is, you know, using the technology that they use now in tennis to make sure that the balls and strikes are called accurately.
And I would say, actually, I don't mind that. That's a situation of that's akin to letting the umpires wear glasses, you know.
Right, right.
You know. So, I mean, you're just improving the precision of it. The only issue with that would be if it ever would slow down the game, you know, for all that. I mean, face it, one of the worst things right now about football is instant replay. I mean, you can go, you know, 6 minutes between plays because you're waiting for them to kind of hem and haw and figure out what New York is telling you about this or that. If as long as it can be something which is instantaneous, tennis actually works because they – show that replay, and as long as you trust the technology.
Yeah.
My concern about all of that is, you know, I don't know. I would assume that they would enforce the same standards and technology would work, but we're putting an awful lot of faith in general in our lives right now, you know, self-driving cars, et cetera, on these things not failing. So let's just hope that, you know, it's trustworthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one thing I would say about the strike zone and the umpires and all that is that doesn't change. That just makes it more accurate. And on the replay issue for the NFL, Ethan, you might agree with me on this. There are times where it takes a long time, but there are also the opposite times where the booth is looking at things like at the same time that the refs are, and they'll, you know, message in and say, we need to correct that, or the guy was out of bounds. So yeah, they actually have been more efficient with making more expedient judgment calls. There are those big plays, though, that they want to make sure they get right, and it does take minutes.
Where what people are forgetting is that the human aspect is an important part of the game, and it creates things that you could argue aren't good, but you could also argue are good, and that is controversy. I'm not saying that there aren't things that could be corrected. I think that
we love controversy.
I think that putting, you know, a challenge system in the balls and strikes would be really good. Do I want fully robotic umpires calling the games? No, I don't. I mean, it's the same thing with right now in FIFA and soccer. I mean, everything is being over reviewed to the point where it is killing the consistency of the game, and it's really hurting soccer right now internationally. And you mentioned that it's happening in football as well. So I'm okay putting in some level of review, but you have to keep that human aspect in there as well.
I can't imagine that Mr. Benfred was not bombarded with negativity after this trial balloon, because there has been, I don't know how much you've noticed it, Joe, but on Twitter, I don't think I've seen anyone react positively. And then my favorite was, and I think Jennings mentioned this too, you know, what are we going to do next? Have the eighth and ninth batter hit off a tee?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But like I said, I don't, at this point, I don't put anything past them, because I think that they're in for the cheap highs and for the quick profits. And I don't doubt whatsoever that we'll see more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's sad to hear.
And bah humbug, Joe.
Sad to hear.
He's like, it's just like having Scrooge on as a guest, Fred, isn't it?
Well, you know, this might be my last appearance on the Mark Reardon show, just because, at least in the past, I was somewhat entertaining with my grouseiness.
I think you're speaking for a lot of baseball fans. I'm telling you, the reaction is not positive on this, but I did think it was interesting when you shared the story last night. And again, I understand the commissioner's position about trying to come up with creative things to improve the game and make people more interested, but I think the salary cap idea would be the one that I would favor, and it's the one that'll never happen. That's the sad part.
I just want to tell you that I think I have pretty good judgment, because you might recall that I introduced you to Scott Jennings.
I do recall that. You know, that we should highlight that a little bit, because, and I mentioned this before, this is so weird. I used to drive to work at 3 in the morning in Milwaukee to WTMJ, and I was familiar with WHAS in Louisville, where Joe used to work, and I would listen to him in the middle of the night. I mean, I didn't even know you at the time, and I would listen to your show because I knew the station, and I was going into work. And then we hired, at WTMJ, the program director for HAS, his name was Rick Belcher. And this was in the early days of the internet, Joe. And I had emailed you. I found an email address and said, hey, I need some dirt on this new guy, Rick Belcher. And Joe was nice enough to send me a jingle of Rick Belcher, like when he was a disc jockey, which was really embarrassing. And I love that. But when I listened to Joe in the middle of the night, his news guy at 3 a.m. was Scott Jennings. And they were just talking back and forth, right? That was, you guys were doing the show back then.
Yeah, well, he was at that time, he was a University of Louisville communications student, and he was working part time, and he came in and was my news guy, you know, for my talk show back in the day, and that was the beginning of it. Of course, he's a great talent, and I heard it immediately, but I'm glad to be a small part of his legacy. But no, he's a great dude.
So what happened was is that I would say it's maybe 8 years ago, I'm at the Kentucky Derby. Joe and I have known, then we became friends, and I would go to the Derby and to the Breeders' Cup, and we would hook up, and we've stayed in contact over the years. And at one point, he says to me, well, you have to meet my friend Scott Jennings. He used to work with, you know, in the Bush administration, work with Mitch McConnell. And I met him at a Derby. That's when I think I met him in person. We may have done something on the air before I met him in person, but man, talk about a relationship that really took off. And you'd have to admit, as a close personal friend of Jennings, he's just entered a different stratosphere here. I mean, I've got guests, and this is no joke, that name drop him now on a regular basis, Joe.
No, that's because he has become the go-to guy. And the talent was always there. It's just a matter of the opportunity. What I find so interesting about all this is that, and I would assume that many of your listeners don't watch CNN.
Yeah, right.
What happened is, you know, there was the great study that came out, I guess, or a survey last week, or what analysis of the, you know, it just showed that Scott is more popular than CNN.
I believe
that. Millions and millions and millions of views of his clips on there. But you would hope that maybe he might be part of the CNN future. He might be able to bring over other people back in the days when it used to be a little bit more balanced.
Dude, and I haven't said this to him, but it's a no-brainer. Give him a show. Are you kidding me? It would be awesome.
And let's not forget, Mark, there was a week 2 years ago maybe where Scott Jennings and Joe Arnold filled in for you.
Let's not also forget that I told the bosses a long time ago that they should be my regular fill-ins, and they had asked me about that. You right, Joe?
Yeah,
it wasn't on me. I'll tell you that.
We were the original Golden at Bats.
You were! And that's a great way to close, Joe Arnold. You've done it. See, you're still a radio pro. I love you. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Joe.
Peace.
And I found this story over the break that I loved, and I thought you would love it too, and I'm going to share it here. This is about something that happened in 1980 in Georgia. Charles and Catherine Romer are their names. And they were very wealthy, apparently. They had a home in Scarsdale, New York, but they would go down to Bal Harbour, Florida every year to take advantage of the warm weather. You would probably argue that the Romers were far ahead of their time because now more and more people do that, right?
Right.
So they're in their 70s when all this happened in 1980. They have a Lincoln Continental, black Lincoln Continental. They head north in early April, so they leave Florida just after Easter. But after a long day of driving, they stop in Brunswick, Georgia at a Holiday Inn. They check into their room, they unpack everything, and after that, they're never, ever heard from again. The next morning, a housekeeper let herself inside the room to straighten up, and she sees a book. There's a novel there. There's glasses next to the bed. There's some clothes in the closet. There's a bottle of scotch. There's actually some tax forms on a desk. And after a few days, the hotel staff's like, oh, they're not coming back.
You know, and the car's gone, I guess.
The car's gone, right. So they have not been in that room, and nobody is around. No sign of them. So they were both on their second marriages. They had only been married for 6 years. Charles was a retired oil executive. He had two sons, Charles Jr. and Richard. And Catherine had worked as a stenographer. And she met someone who was her ex-husband. They had a son. They ran in the same social circles. They say Charles Romer Jr., his son, said that he last heard from his father and stepmother on Easter Sunday of that year. Remember, they took off on Easter Sunday, right? But then he doesn't hear from them. Now, you know, you'd have to think back then. We didn't have cell phones. There's no texting and stuff like that.
We can't ping. We can't ping their cell phones.
They don't answer his phone calls when he thinks they should be back in New York. So he tries the hotel that they were planning on visiting. He tries to track the route home. The police are involved. The cops at the time call this the biggest all-out search in the history of Southern Georgia. They look everywhere for this couple. They are never, ever found.
Bizarre.
Over the decades, there are people that are speculating. Was it a freak accident? They were older. Did they run off the road into the water? This is an area, Brunswick in Glynn County, Georgia, has over 400 square miles of coastline and marshland and timber and stuff like that. That's according to a cop that was involved in the case. But then they had people that thought, well, maybe they were targeted. They were a lot of money. They were worth a lot of money. They weren't shy about showing off their wealth. They had a new car, you know, the Lincoln Continental. They had a new custom license plate. And she apparently, Catherine, wore hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry.
What?
So they were really, really rich.
Ostentatious.
So they had different stories. You know, when this happens, people are sharing stories. Someone said they saw them interacting with another couple outside the hotel room. That might have been true, might not have been true. Somebody said that they talked to them at a local business. But then there was a person that said that they were almost run off the road by a black Lincoln Continental the night that the couple disappeared.
Mm.
Now, all that information was in the hands of authorities back there in 1980. But last week, they had something called Florida's Sunshine State Sonar Team, which helps find missing people in bodies of water. They find a Lincoln Continental in a pond off New Jessup Highway near the Royal Inn Hotel, which was the Holiday Inn in Glynn County, Georgia.
Oh, my gosh.
The car matches the one that the Romers were driving. They found human remains. They have now, when I found this story last week, they did not confirm that the human remains were the Romers, but in fact, it was the Romers.
Oh,
and a mystery from all that time has now been solved.
Well, but here's what we don't know. Was it an accident? Did somebody get
right
in the car and drive them in there and rob them?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, I don't know. I'm going to look at a different version of the story here because the family issued a statement, you know, very happy that they've, you know, had some closure to this for the first time.
Oh, can you
in
imagine?
All these years. But I'm trying to see, you know, what's happening here. So I'm trying to find more information, but I'm meeting the paywall on the TV from that area. Let's see here.
That's really interesting. Because if somebody did rob them, was in the car, and then drove them in afterwards and took off with the money, that's one thing. Was it an accident? They went off the roadway. Was it some sort of suicide thing? I'm thinking not that.
So they said that the team of divers found a rusting, deteriorating remains of the 79 Lincoln, which was the car that they had. They found a human bone. It just says, the way the story is written, is they found one bone inside the vehicle.
It's a lot of years in water.
It is a lot. Look, the guy who is the crime expert said the rust, corrosion, all kinds of bacteria that's going to develop on that car, trying to clean stuff up. If you can find something, it's going to be difficult. But apparently they did get confirmation, and they have given the family some closure. But again, to your point, I don't think that they know exactly what happened here. They say that one person thought at the time, one of the divers, this is interesting. Okay, here's a theory. One of the divers tells a local reporter that perhaps the couple accidentally put the car in reverse and drove into the pond, indicating it might have been a tragic accident. Look, there was, you know, alcohol in the room. Mr. Rummer could have been a little disoriented. You don't know what could have happened.
That's
but
a heavy car.
Yeah. Oh, that thing is a boat, right?
So for them to try to get out, boy, that's really interesting.
Anyway, I like that just because we like true crime stories, right?
And if you're a relative, all these years you're going, maybe they are alive. Maybe they just decided to disappear and went to Europe. I mean, you don't know.
Well, it's true, because those were theories that were tossed around
at the time.
Because they thought, well, maybe they were targeted, or, you know, somebody stole all the jewelry. It'd be interesting if the divers found any of the jewelry. They only found one bone. I guess that means things just drift away over time if you're sitting in a car. Right. Yeah, that's 40 years. But a fascinating story.
Get more at 971talk.com.